Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 255. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hello from Bloomington. I feel like I've run a marathon already today.
Oh, really? Why, you've been shoveling snow?
Well, no, thank God that's over. But no, I had a relative show up from Western Australia last night, and you know, we had to scramble to get ready for him and everything, and he was only here slightly less than 12 hours. But actually, he's the one that ran the marathon. He did a driving marathon, 14 hours from Cincinnati yesterday through the snow and everything in Wisconsin. Finally arrives about 9 o'clock last night in one piece, and you know, he's driving on the wrong side of the road for him.
And oh, it's like, geez. Yeah.
You know, yeah. These Aussies, they like adventure, you know?
Oh, man. So well, hey,
kind of fun seeing him.
I just want to mention that our buddy Phil Wilson's off this week, but one thing about your guy from Australia, your relative, is he's hitting all the top cities, Cincinnati, Twin Cities.
Yeah.
He's skipping Chicago.
You know.
Yeah.
He's headed to Kansas City, so he's headed down 35 right now, and then he's going to Houston, then he's flying back to L.A., and I mean, you know, talk about a globetrotter. These Aussies travel more than anyone else I know, you know. They're all over the place all the time. And it's his second time coming to the United States, and he's asking me, you know, he's from Perth, you know, and I was born in Perth, and
yeah.
It's like, he's asking me, well, have you ever been back? No. You know, I feel like a load, you know. It's like I don't do world travel, you know. I've never had an opportunity to go back that far to the other side of the world. But gosh, I learned all this interesting stuff about Perth. You know, I mean, it's a fantastic place, but man, is it isolated compared to the rest of the country. You know, Steve and I were talking about that, you know, like between Sydney or Melbourne and Perth is a lot of desolate country, you know, and I don't know too many people that ever would even think about driving that. But
I think it'd be fun if you had the time.
Well, except he was telling me that he's heard of tourists getting, you know, trying to do those drives and being out there. I mean, it gets hot. It's 100 degrees in Perth, or it was yesterday. You know, it's summer down there. And he said tourists will take off and start driving into the outback, and they don't have enough water. And, I mean, they'll get stranded. And, you know, you can die. You know, it's like you're out in the middle of the desert. There's not a lot of highway patrol cruising up and down looking for dumb tourists, you know.
Wow.
But, you know, it's a rough country. You got to be a rough customer to deal with a lot of that stuff back there. But Perth itself sounds fantastic, you know. He told me it's got the largest per capita population of millionaires.
Really?
In the world.
Perth
and
does, or
Perth, mainly because of real estate, you know.
Oh, interesting. Well, here's what I think you should do. I think you should book passage on a cargo ship. You can rent. They have cabins. You can rent cabins, and
we could work as the cook.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now there'd be a mutiny. There'd be a mutiny. They'd throw them overboard.
Yeah, right. A cook I am not.
Oh my God.
One day I'll get back. My brother's been back a few times because he's actually got a son who moved to Australia, did his MBA at the University of Melbourne, and married an Aussie girl and works there. So my brother, who lives in Portland, he's been back 2-3 times at least with his wife, you know. And it's like, I've never had the time or the, you know, money or the, you know, to take off and just go, you know. But one of these days, we're going to travel, right, Steve? One of these
absolutely
days.
Well, my wife has a cousin, a young cousin, and she's married now with a baby, and they live in Melbourne.
Oh,
and,
really?
And so her folks, my wife's cousins, they went there to visit and all that, and so the door's open, so.
They loved it. Everybody who I've ever talked to that goes to Australia loves it.
I not only loved it, I love the people.
Yeah.
I mean, God, the people are just so unbelievable. I mean, I'm sure there's crime there. I mean, obviously there's crime wherever there's humans. Oh my God. I mean, the people were just phenomenal. I would love to have stayed there. Well, my biggest thing is I want to go up to the Great Barrier Reef.
Oh,
I've been fantasizing about that ever since I started scuba diving, you know, 30 years ago. But
well, even around Brisbane and the Gold Coast, I mean, that's like fantastic beaches and surfing. And I've never been up there, even as a kid. I mean, I was born in Perth, and then we lived near Melbourne. But if I ever went back, that's part of the problem. I'd want to go to so many places. I'd need a month, you know.
Yeah.
I'd have to go to both coasts because I've got relatives on both coasts. And
well, ship your Woody over there.
What's that?
Ship your Woody.
Yeah, right.
And drive it around and then sell it at the end because it's yeah, so unique.
Right. Yeah, and, well, I'm going on eBay with that thing in the spring. Maybe somebody in Australia will buy it. You never
yeah,
know.
Yeah. Well, you can put it on the cargo ship you take over there. Anyway, so Tim is sitting there saying, hey, when the hell are we going to talk about tech stories and
well, you know,
Minnesota
you know what
stories?
They have in Australia?
What?
You know what they have Target.
Oh,
you're kidding. They do not.
I thought that there's no way they have Target in Australia, but they do. I just Googled it. It's crazy.
I did not really? Know that. Huh.
Yeah, let's see if they have one in Perth. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, Target Australia.
Like they probably have more than one.
I had no idea. You know, we read about them going into Canada with not much success, but I never even stopped to think that they could be in Australia.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, they have they have 5 stores in Perth.
I'll be darned.
Well, wow.
Maybe I should get a job with Target and get a free business trip over there.
There you go.
There's an idea.
I don't think I'm going to do that.
Unbelievable. Well, the only thing is that I'd like to go over there and have sunscreen distribution rights.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
God, the sun there is just, oh, man.
Well, and, you know, yeah, they are extremely aware of that. And, you know, their skin cancer rates there are really high because of the sun. And they all, well, and, you know, we've got that local Aussie entrepreneur that started Coolabar, which is that protective clothing, you know, the clothing with, you know, sun protection. Yeah, it's a big deal down there. You know, people wear a lot of hats, slather on a lot of zinc oxide.
And, it's
an amazing sporting culture down there. And, you know, surfing is like the national pastime or, you know, or cricket, or Aussie rules football, all of the above, you know, rugby. They're into it all.
Well, Tim, did they have any data breach problems down there? That was just U.S., wasn't it?
I don't think so. No. No, yeah, that was just here.
Huh.
So.
That's another reason to move.
Well, you know, Target may have to pull out of places like that because the article about the data breach hurting their profits are down, what, 46% or something?
Yeah, they got a pretty big hit. But the other story I put in from the Pioneer Press, it seems like they've hit the bottom. So, you know, it was less bad than Wall Street thought. So their stock actually went up.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wow. Yeah.
So I guess we've seen the worst of it.
Yeah.
Does that mean Steinhoffel's bacon is saved, or, you know, what's the story?
He wasn't doing
too well before, you know. Lee Schaefer at the Tribune wrote a column about, you know, now they're back to the problems they had before. You know, once you get the data breach out of the way, it's like all of a sudden reality sets in and you realize, you know, you had some serious problems as it was, you know, so.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's got some issues.
Yeah.
Well, so Best Buy lays off 2,000 managers at the same time they announce better profit during the holiday quarter. But, you know, it's really interesting because you see all these different perspectives. There was the Reuters article about the better profit that they had, but also the article in Salon about how Best Buy is a scary predictor for the U.S. economy. And you read that article and it's like, whoa, it really does show that Best Buy can be some kind of a predictor of people's spending habits and so on. But don't you think it has more to do with what's new and what's fresh than it is necessarily? Because what's going to really drive people into the stores all the time, it's something new, new category or new products.
One of the things that in the Salon article they point out is that we've got all of our flat screen TVs and all of our new appliances and this and that. So they're going to have a real difficult time because the millennial generation just hasn't you know, they don't have the credit that baby boomers had, and probably won't, you know, credit's probably going to be very tight for a long time. And a lot of the Best Buy business, that's what they, you know, what it drove it to the height.
Yeah. Don't they give a credit card to damn near anybody though? I mean, their credit requirements aren't really very high, I don't think.
I think like everybody else, it's tightened up a bit.
Yeah. So. Well, people just don't have as much money to spend as maybe the boomers did back in the heyday of Best Buy in the 80s and 90s, you know, was a different world.
Well, yeah. I got to tell you now, I've been in just in the Twin Cities, but I've been in four different Best Buy stores over the course of the last, say, 4 or 5 weeks. And I got to tell you guys, they are really not only merchandising incredibly well, but the price points are incredibly good, finally. Mm-hmm. So I bought a 1 terabyte USB 3 drive so I could back up my, have a backup for my MacBook Pro. And it was $69.
I got you beat, Seagate. Steve.
What?
I got you beat. Really? I bought one for $59.
Where? At Best Buy?
No, at Office Max.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah,
oh,
really nice Toshiba. Yeah.
Yeah, Toshiba's a good drive. So is Hitachi, but I'm a Seagate boy. I got just about all Seagates, but I was blown away. $69 for a 1 terabyte USB 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's that really slim one. So it's like, oh my God. And all I needed is for, you know, I just want it for backup. And also I've got a portable iPhoto library that I keep on it so I can plug it into different computers.
There you go.
And, you know, have everything accessible, slideshows and so on.
I finally had to get one because my 250 gigs on my MacBook Air, you know, I'm constantly running out of space. I gotta put it on something else. So
Wait a minute. What size SSD drive do you have in that?
250 gig is all.
256. You got 256 SSD. Well, here is an idea for you, my friend.
What's that?
There is a new 128 gig SanDisk micro SD card, and there's a little adapter that you can buy where you can put the card in there and you can slide it in, and it's flush mount in the little SD card.
Ooh, I'm looking at my SD slot. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. It'll slide right in there and it's flush mount, and now you all of a sudden have another 128 gigs of storage.
Oh, I need that.
Yeah. I'll put links in the show notes to this stuff, because this is it's a great little technology. I've got a 256 as well.
Don't you take like a pretty big performance hit on a SD card though?
Yeah, but if you're just storing stuff, you know, documents or whatever, then you're fine.
Yeah, it's like I don't really
the read write's fine.
Yeah, I don't really want to schlep around my 1 terabyte, you know, drive that I just got in my briefcase. You know, I mean, whereas something like that, if it's flush mount right in my Air, that rocks, man. I want that.
Well, and it's a SanDisk Ultra, so it's a very very fast card.
Fast,
yeah. Oh,
so cool. It's a class 10 card.
Class 10 card. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I don't know. Do they make MacBook Airs with larger SSD drives now?
I don't know.
You get 512.
Can you get a 512 in an Air?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay. That's what I'll be doing for my next one, I guess. Yep. And I, you know, I don't do that much video work or anything like you do, Steve. But you know, I've got a lot of photographs and enough other stuff that, you know, 250 just doesn't cut it.
Yeah. Well, that 1 terabyte bus powered drive is fine because, you know, I mean, that works out pretty well. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I got tons of space on that. I'll never fill that up. Well, famous last words.
Yeah.
I'll never fill that up. Yeah. Right.
Oh my God. So, in other developments, what's the thing about Google tapping the U of M for a 3D sensing smartphone?
Yeah, it's this Project Tango thing. It's a pretty crazy idea, and I can imagine that once this comes out and gets used in more than just prototypes, that you can do a lot of indoor mapping, and I'm sure this will probably show up at some point inside Google Maps, are these 3D maps of interior places.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And what does the U have to do with this? What?
It wasn't clear to me from the Business Journal story that it's something, it's with the Multiple Autonomous Robotic Systems Laboratory.
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah, it's Mars.
Multiple
Mars
Autonomous. Research.
Yeah, I don't know what the, I guess it's part of their, you know, part of their research is into 3D modeling, I guess. I don't know. It's just, the Kathy Grayson story was very kind of short, and there wasn't a lot of information in it.
Yeah, it says Google picked them as an academic partner.
Well, at least there's a local angle, though.
I just wish Google would pick us as a Google Fiber location. That's what I wish they'd pick.
Well, yeah.
I think that's going to be a while.
Well, you know, but a little birdie told me that if there was enough noise coming out of our fine town.
Oh, really?
That maybe we could get their attention. You know, it makes you wish that R.T. Ryback was still mayor or something, you know, because you'd think he could help pull it off. Maybe he still can. I don't know.
Interesting.
He's out hanging out at the White House now. He was tweeting from the White House the other day.
Well, so, you know how I am about bandwidth. So the other day, the other morning, I'm going to this funeral, and this is on Tuesday morning, and my wife says at 7 a.m., she goes, the internet's out. It's like, what? So I come down here, and yeah, my modem's blinking, and I reset it, and no internet, and I called. But first, I checked the status. Everything's fine on Comcast page, and I end up spending an hour with tech support on the line, and they finally said, the only thing we can do is send out a tech. And our first open opportunity is noon on Thursday. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. I can't wait until noon on Thursday. I mean, come on. I mean, this is like saying, oh, your bathrooms don't work. The plumber will be out 2 days from now. It's like, okay. Or your heat's off, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's almost like that. Oh, I know it's a first world problem, but at any rate, so that morning I was so mad. I said, okay, that's it. I'm tossing out residential, and I signed a 2-year agreement for Comcast business class because they have a 4-hour turnaround. And, then I got on social media and I got the Comcast executive escalation group. And so I got an appointment Wednesday at noon, and the guy came out and fixed it probably in about 10 minutes.
Wow.
And I asked him about the business class stuff, and he said, you know, you're going to love it. You're on a dedicated network, because I'm already paying $100 a month for 105 down, 10 up. And
what's business class cost you then?
Well, so business class is 129.
Oh, that's not so much more than what you're paying.
Well, except though, it's a little bit slower. It's 75 down and 15 up. But here's the kicker. The kicker is it's a dedicated network. And at night, when the businesses aren't working, of course, the network is there's more available bandwidth.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In theory, I'm going to have a better experience and better throughput. And
here's for that nighttime streaming.
Well, and here's the punchline: unlimited data.
Yeah, ooh. There's no cap.
There's no cap on the business class.
Oh. That's what you should have had for a long time.
Should have had that for a long time. Yeah. So
you're not gonna have any problems with Netflix streaming, no matter what service you have, because they've solved the impasse.
Yeah. So tell us about that.
Well, it's basically they signed a transit agreement so that Netflix will now directly connect to the Comcast network. They had been previously connecting through Cogent, I believe, was their CDN.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now Netflix will be just directly connecting with Comcast.
Yep. That's got to make a big difference.
At the peering level. Yep.
Yeah. No, they have a transit agreement. So they're basically trading traffic. Yeah. So what it'll mean for consumers is that your Netflix streaming should be a lot better. And by now, this was announced last Sunday. So by now, I think it probably should be in effect. And all of the problems that Julio and others were talking about just a few weeks ago should be a thing of the past.
Well, I will tell you from personal experience that my wife, who's always laughed at me for wanting to have Blu-ray for movies that I want to keep, she's like, well, I don't really see the difference. Well, she
really?
I know. Just don't even get me started. But anyway, so she
you really can, especially if it's something like Gravity would be a great movie to show, you know, both SD and HD, the
right,
difference,
because right.
There's so much detail and so much action going
Or streaming it, right?
Yeah.
The other night, I think I've told this story before, but we were watching, I don't know, some show, and she goes, so why are all those blocks in the, I said, what do you mean? She goes, you know, those squares, some are gray and some are black where it's supposed to be black. I said, well, that's why I love Blu-ray, because you've got, you don't have enough bit depth to have enough grayscale, because they're streaming this stuff. So there's not enough data coming across. I mean, they can't stream Blu-ray quality because it's, you know, 4.8 gigs a side. And so you end up with that kind of a problem. Mm-hmm. The quality is just not there. So this is actually very, very good news. And I have noticed a difference. Have you guys?
Yeah, I think I have. Yeah, I haven't watched it much lately, but oh God, the stuttering and the stopping was driving me crazy.
Yeah.
You know, oh God, the delays, the pauses, you know.
Well, I'm on Charter, so it doesn't make any difference.
Oh, that's right.
It's the same as it always was.
You got to move.
Lucky you.
Well, yeah. I noticed it was there are times when I play, you know, I'm doing something on my screen, doing some layout of something or, you know, putting images into a presentation for my wife. And it's, you know, 7 o'clock at night. And so I'll put my MacBook Pro Retina on and I'll stream a Netflix TV show just next to me.
Huh.
That's where I really noticed the quality increase. I mean, almost like that evening when they announced they solved this problem. Yeah.
You noticed it right away.
It right away.
Good.
I guess they put more ports on that day.
They must have.
That was the problem, is that they didn't have enough ports. They just run out because there's so much traffic.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and that was Comcast's thing, is they wanted them to help pay for the infrastructure.
Yeah, for the more hardware. Yep.
Yep.
Exactly. It also comes out the money. You know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Costs more money to serve more customers, so, you know. But it shouldn't affect Netflix pricing, because some people have even speculated that they're paying less now to have the direct connect than they would through paying third-party CDN providers.
Really?
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yep. So it won't be a hit on their stock, huh?
Right. So it'll be better service and lower pricing or the same. Same money, you know.
Well, so
it won't add to any of the costs.
So here's a question. What do you think is going to happen to the content delivery network provider Akamai now that Apple is looking at building out their own CDN and now this Netflix thing bypassing, you know, the
Cogent
CDNs? Yeah. I mean, was it Cogent or Level 3 that Netflix was using?
No, it was Cogent. See, Cogent, of all of the CDN and backbone providers, they're the most defiant, and they don't do these kinds of deals because they don't think they need to. So I think they're going to have trouble in this era, because, you know, it's just a business kind of a thing, and as the, you know, as the internet matures and more people are on and more, there's more traffic and more video traffic, you're going to have these kinds of business arrangements. So they're not playing ball in this kind of thing. So I think they're going to have trouble. All the other guys should be okay. And I thought that Apple was using Limelight anyway. I didn't think they were using Akamai. Maybe for their websites they're using Akamai.
Yeah,
but well, for Apple TV, yeah. They were using Limelight.
Yeah, they are using Akamai for, because I see the Akamai tags sometimes in URLs off the website. So
right, but for the website, but for Apple TV, they were using Limelight.
Okay,
because they did a deal a couple of years ago with Netflix, so that Apple TV would have the best Netflix experience.
Okay,
with Limelight.
Yeah, yeah.
And speaking of Apple TV, we don't have it in the show notes, but they discounted the current one. Which
new one's coming out?
New one's coming out.
To the new one coming this spring. Yeah, that will be fun.
Yeah, yeah, we're beyond Mobile World Congress, so maybe that new 6-inch iPhone will come out too.
Hmm.
No, it won't be 6 inches, but I'll bet it's going to be 5. So they'll come up with a 5-inch iPhone. They're not screwing around.
Yeah,
it's going to right away. It's going to be like, it's not going to be like 4.5. It'll just be straight to 5.
Really?
But they'll probably still have the 4-inch one too. So they'll have two different ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read a survey where women don't want a bigger one. You know, very, very few women responded that they would want a bigger phone. So
but that's kind of against what a lot of the other, you know, if you look at people that do have like 5.5 and 6 inch phones, Android phones. Mm-hmm. Those tended to be more women who only wanted one device. They didn't want to carry a phone and a tablet. They only wanted one.
Interesting.
So that's sort of if you have a 5.5 or 6 inch phone, that's big enough to be a tablet, and you can just put it in your purse.
Your little wrist purse, even.
No.
Well,
why? Well, I don't know.
Maybe not.
That's all you'd have in there then. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I think Apple's going to do something. It would be interesting to see, you know, if they go larger than that. But I would say that 5 inches should be big enough to handle most of the market.
Yep.
Well, so, you know, there's so many movie directors and film directors like David Lynch and others who have just slammed people for watching their, you know, movie or TV show on a phone. Saying that, you know, you can't have a good experience, you know, it's horrible to watch it that way, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's so much content that is just perfect for the phone. My wife, we had the dog in the car, so I stayed in the car when my wife went into a store last night, and I wanted to finish watching this interview. It's called Serious Jibber Jabber with Conan O'Brien, and he's interviewing Ken Burns, and it's an hour-long interview, and you know, Conan is still mildly amusing, but it's all about him being very serious with this guest. And it's the first one I saw. I didn't even know this thing was out. And it was a great experience having it on the phone because it was right there and it worked great.
Yeah.
And you know, looked good. And so I think it doesn't matter if you want to watch on these devices, you're going to eventually want a slightly bigger device. Still got to be able to go in your pocket, but it should be.
I can't imagine watching a long form like a full movie on anything that's smaller than say a 7-inch tablet, though, because it just, I think your eyes would just get too fatigued, you know?
Right.
Just
over that period of time
because it's so small. Watching like 30-minute TV is fine, or watching a podcast that's, you know, 20 minutes long or whatever. I think that's great on a phone, and I do that occasionally. But yeah, it's a phone screen, and I've got a 4.7-inch. You know, it's still too small for watching a longer program.
Yeah. Well, you could probably pay for it with Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. Can you explain this Mt. Gox thing? What was the deal with it's based in Tokyo? And they had the guy on TV and he looked like he was about 25.
He's 27.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the deal with this?
Well, so it started off as a way for people to trade cards for Magic the Gathering, you know, which is, for lack of a better term, it's kind of like a Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, it's a virtual game and so forth.
which is huge in Japan.
Well,
right?
It's huge around the world, but it's it's this kind
Japan
of stuff.
Japan is really into that. Really stuff, into it. Though.
And so Mount Gox is short for Magic the Gathering Online Exchange.
Oh, so that's when, what that means.
Yeah.
Oh,
so when it started off, the guy that founded it ended up morphing it into. He started playing with Bitcoin and doing Bitcoin, and then pretty soon people wanted to exchange Bitcoin. So he basically turned it into a Bitcoin exchange. And the problem is $416 million in Bitcoins and 55 million of Mt. Gox's own Bitcoins have disappeared.
Yep.
And they had to file bankruptcy. And so it's like, I'm an early adopter in just about everything, except I'm not going to be an early adopter of Bitcoin.
Yep.
I mean, I got enough problems trying to make sure that my 401k stays relatively intact, you know, with the current market, let alone dabbling in Bitcoin.
And the problem with this the missing Bitcoins is it's up to the victims to go find them now. So these guys are having to invest enormous amount of time to try to go find their Bitcoins. You know, nobody's going to do it for them.
Right.
You know, but it's some serious money that people have lost or could lose. Yeah, it's just a crazy story. But what gets me is how Mark Andreessen is still defending Bitcoin. It's just, I don't know if he used the term bump on the road, but, this happened in all major industries where there were screw-ups like this early on, and they're still positive about Bitcoin. So,
here's the biggest problem is that, we're a fiat currency in the U.S., so we're no longer backed by gold. You can't turn your money in for gold. And when Nixon took us off the gold standard back in the 70s, we were free to print as much money as we wanted, within reason, obviously. And so now Bitcoin is redeemable for fiat currencies around the world in your own local country. And the problem is the whole thing, the whole monetary system, for the most part, is based on trust. Mm-hmm. And so, do you trust, if you're one of the people who lost in that $416 million pool of Bitcoins, how much trust are you going to have?
Well, that's just it. I read where one analyst said, why would you trust Bitcoin any more than you trust some, rogue country who devalues their currency? You know what I mean? It happens all the time. Well, kind of things happen. So why in the world would you trust Bitcoin to be any different? It's totally based on trust, and a lot of people got screwed on Bitcoin.
Well, I got into a little bit of a debate with a client who shall remain nameless because he listens to the podcast, and we were talking about, he's a huge fan of Bitcoin. We're talking about Bitcoin, and I said, okay, so let me ask you a question. He said, what? I said, how much are you dabbling in Bitcoin? He said, I don't know, maybe 10% of my portfolio. And I said, okay, well, would you take 10% of your portfolio and buy stocks in companies in Belarus? And he looked at me and he goes, but I don't know of any companies in Belarus. I said, yeah, but would you trust and have faith in the Belarusian economy and the companies that are there and the market and so on? He goes, well, no. Why the hell are you putting your money into Bitcoin, for God's sakes? It's kind of the same thing. I mean, I would maybe dabble in it, just to play
I mean, like, I know a guy I used to work with who's now an entrepreneur, got a med tech startup, but his son, who was about 16 or 17, just, a year or two ago, he just bought one. And, he probably made a lot of money off that one that he bought, and just dabbled around it a little bit. And I hope he sold it before, it cratered a fair amount here. But yeah, that's one thing. But, people's geekiness is just getting in the way of good sense, I think.
Well, except though that at some point, now that the world's connected, there has to be some way to manage transactions on a global basis that are not necessarily going through a bunch of middlemen, and you've got to buy futures and you've got to hedge and all that stuff. So, there was quick story. I'm sorry to digress here, but, you guys remember Commodore, right?
Yep, the computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Commodore 64.
Yep. So I'm at Newtek, the video toaster company. Tim Jennison, who, by the way, is there's a new movie out called Tim's Vermeer.
Right.
That's at the Uptown. But at any rate, it was just a really wonderful dynamic company. The kicker was the board only worked in a Commodore Amiga because that was the only computer whose video circuitry put out the television standard NTSC. And so you didn't have to do a whole bunch of transcoding of the video signal to get it out of the box. And so at one point we wanted to build cards for the Mac and the PC, and Tim and the VP, Paul Montgomery, flew out to meet with Irving Gould, the chairman of Commodore, to try to convince him to you know, basically license the chipset to Newtek so that they could build the chipset right into the card, and then it would work on a Mac and then work on a PC. Here's the punchline. Irving wouldn't do it. The reason he wouldn't do it, because they would move containers of Amigas from country to country, and he had a major currency hedge fund guy, the CEO of the company, and he said he made personally made $2 million a year just off of currency
just on
hedging,
arbitrage?
Just on arbitrage on the moving the boxes from country to country. Seriously, and he didn't want to give up that $2 million. Now, of course, the company was out of business in about a year, but that's the kind of stuff that people do, and you know, they try to extract whatever they can out of the transaction as it moves from country to country. So that when you think about the power of Bitcoin or the new one Dogecoin, you know, the whole point is to have, you know, a currency at a global level that wouldn't necessarily or wouldn't be tied to any state or any fiat currency. And you'd get the middlemen out of the equation as you were doing transactions. So it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. And at some point we'll be there. It just that it's probably not going to happen in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So, by the way, do you want your paycheck this week in Bitcoin?
Bitcoin. I don't think so.
Nah. Okay. So what else is going on out there?
Well, the only thing that came out of Mobile World Congress this week is this Gear Fit, which is a it's a fitness device that Samsung has come out with, but it has a very interesting form factor, which I think is going to be similar to what Apple, if they finally come out with something this year, will look like.
I think it looks great.
This looks a little crude and it's a little big, but the idea is really kind of interesting, and it's instead of having a big square, it's a big long rectangle, and it makes a lot of sense. So I just put it in the show notes because I thought this is the most interesting thing that I've seen in a long time in a wearable, and if it worked with my Nexus, I might consider getting one. But of course, it's only works with Samsung phones.
Yeah. So, but it is, it's cool. I think it looks cool.
Yeah, it gets away from that watch shape that really looks so clunky in so many of the existing devices. Yeah. You know, it's a much cleaner look. It looks more like a bracelet. And the way they show it in the photo with the funky colored screen, you know, I mean, it does have visual appeal for sure.
Yep. So hopefully we're going to get some interesting, you know, wearable stuff that looks different than the Pebbles and whatnot that we've seen up to now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then our pals from TiVo came out
they're the founders of TiVo.
Sorry, you're right.
So they've left
the founders. TiVo.
They left TiVo.
You're right.
You know, it's been 15 years since the TiVo was introduced.
And it's still the best DVR box out there.
Yeah. Yep. Wow.
Yeah. So they came out with something called...
Doesn't mean they're going to stay in business,
though. No, I agree. But they came out with something called Qplay. So tell us what that is, Tim.
Well, so there's, you know, Apple TV and Roku, and there's a lot of different boxes out there that allow you to stream video. So what Qplay is a video streamer like those, but unlike those, it runs off of an app. So it doesn't have a remote control. It's right now it's only an iPad app, and they're supposed to do an Android app as well. But instead of doing it by channel, like you'd say on your Apple TV, hey, let's stream Netflix. It has it by show. So you know, the show could be on Netflix, it could be on Hulu, it could be, you know, on some other service, and they're aggregating all of these things by show. So if you say, hey, I want to watch, you know, this cooking show, you know, where is it? Is it on this or that? You don't have to think about it. It's just, you just say, okay, hit this show and it'll start to play. So it's an interesting idea that's sort of like a Chromecast in a way, but the way that they've organized the content is very different.
Well,
it's still considered to be in beta, right? I mean, it's just an early version of this product, and they don't support that many content sources yet, right?
I think it's just, what is it? It's just like YouTube, I think.
Or, well, isn't it Netflix too?
No, Netflix and Hulu are coming later.
Oh, coming later, okay.
Right now in their beta, it's very limited sources, and I think YouTube is about the only way to do it. But the way that it works is you set up queues of videos, so you can set up...
Queue, there's where the queue comes in.
Right. Yeah. You queue up the video, and then you just, you know, you turn it on, but it works the same way that Chromecast works, where it's not coming through your tablet. It's actually streaming directly from the internet, and you're using your tablet as the remote control.
Yeah.
So interesting idea. I'm not sure. It's $50. So, you know, it's certainly priced, you know, well. I'm not sure if it'll take off, but it's a very different approach and it's worth watching.
Yep.
Well, so I need to tell you about something that I was involved in it right at the very early time when it was called Inveni. But Aaron Weber started something called Inveni.com, which was like your Netflix, Hulu queues on steroids, and you could share stuff and all of that. It's morphed into Luma.tv. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I love the app. It does what this adapter does, but does it on steroids, and really is device neutral.
So they're mashing up the directories of all of those
of all
services.
Of them.
Yeah, it's like a TV guide.
Precisely.
Type of thing.
Yeah, so they bring in, you know, if you've got the CBS app or the NBC app, or you got HBO Go or Netflix or whatever you've got, Hulu, you can mash up all the content, and it'll show you where, for example, this particular show is available. So one night, my wife and I are looking on the iTunes or the iTunes movie store, Apple's store on the Apple TV. And I said, wait a minute, I think I've seen this movie on Netflix. So I pulled up Luma, typed in the movie, and then it showed at the bottom that it was available on Netflix. So we went and looked, you know, on Vudu and stuff, which I don't have. But it's really a great little service, especially if Apple does come out with a new product or Roku does expand their platform or the Chromecast platform does accelerate. And there's all these channels. It's going to be really, really hard to find content.
Yeah.
And so instead, somebody sends, hey, you ought to go watch this. And you just type it in and it'll show you all the places it's available. And it's like, yeah, okay, well, there's the one I subscribe to. And you go there and see it.
Yep. So it's a great concept.
Yeah.
Well, so this Qplay will be able to do that, but it'll be able to play it too. So it's like you find it and it doesn't really matter what channel it's on. You just hit play and it'll start playing.
Mm. Yeah. So that's cool. Well, that's
As you have the subscription to whatever the channel is, once they get Netflix and Hulu integrated.
Well, so do you think something like this Luma TV, I mean, you know, it's supposed to be agnostic. But do you think they need to specifically tie into hardware like this? That might help them?
It might. I think it would be interesting if they tied into, say, the Chromecast, because Chromecast has, you know, deals with just about everybody. So if they were able to, like, stream it directly, not only tell you what service it was on, but also, like, to say, okay, I want to watch ET, and it's, okay, it's on iTunes or whatever, it's able to, like, stream directly to the Chromecast. Obviously, you can't do it with iTunes, but if it was on Netflix, you know, as an example, you would be able to do that. So that would be good. I mean, It's a good service because it tells you what show and where it's available. You know, then you have to go to that channel to actually watch it.
Yeah, so it would be nice if they could add something where you could just touch it and it would go to the one that you have available on your specific device.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which would require partnering, right? And that's one thing I haven't heard about from Luma, is whether they've done any partnerships or are seeking to do that. You got to think they would be, though, you know?
I wonder.
To partner with some folks.
Yep.
We'll have to get an update on that.
They should do an Android version of this, too.
Yeah.
This looks good. Looks good. I don't have an iPad, but I have an Android tablet, so.
Well, they must be working on that, too, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can find out. And.
Yep.
And
we'll have to do that.
Yep. So there was a rumor, because some developer had shown what he claimed was the car interface for Apple's iOS. And it looks like it was absolutely true, because they're doing a deal with Ferrari and Mercedes and Volvo.
Yep.
To do their in car screen based operating system. I sure wish I could do a firmware update to my Prius. have it run that. That's not going to happen.
No.
Yep. So they went with the high end, huh? Apple goes with the high end car to launch. Yeah. To launch that, huh? About as high end as you can go.
Yeah, Microsoft has
Ford.
A lot of Ford and I think they have, don't they have Nissan too? They have another brand besides Ford. But so they've been doing this for some time, and so for Apple to enter the market, they would need to, you know, hit somebody else. And it makes sense to do upscale, you know, to start. Oh, yeah. Get some experience, and then maybe they can get, you know, go to GM or someone else later.
Well, I there was some rumor that that Microsoft was going to ditch, or that Ford was going to ditch Microsoft for BlackBerry.
True, because they have that QNX thing, which is apparently in the car is supposedly very, very good.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. The QNX, who they bought to as a basis for BlackBerry 10. Apparently has a huge market in cars. I have never seen one, but you know, it's apparently very profitable. So
They've actually got an asset that might be worth something, huh?
Yeah.
Well, then they're going to need one, because of the fact that they're experimenting with a free version of Windows 8.1, according to The Verge. So it'll be interesting to see if they do that, but you know, they're going to tie Bing into it. So I assume you you'd have to work hard to change, the search engine if you wanted to do that. But,
This is a weird story, because it's got two elements to it. One is that it's going to be an upgrade for Windows 7, you know, people that bought Windows 7, and it's either going to be free or it's going to be close to free. So let's say it's $10, you know. They would get a lot of takers for that, I would think, to upgrade. But at the end of the story, it talks about how they're also, you know, unifying the Windows Phone and the RT, which is the ARM-based version of Windows, into a thing too. And that could be also, you know, either low cost or free. If that were the case, I think they would maybe spur more OEMs to make Windows tablets, you know, because if it's the same or less money than Android, you know, why not, you know, go and do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that would make perfect sense. You know? What I thought was interesting was we went over to my brother-in-law passed last, his funeral was Tuesday, as I mentioned, that I'd gone to one, but that's family unit and their extended loved ones and all that, everybody's a PC user. And what was really, really fascinating was Len's wife, my sister-in-law, she's an IBMer, and she had a stack of Windows Pro offerings, shrink wrap packages, and Windows 8 Pro, and then a Windows 7 Family Pack Home Upgrade, And what was really somewhat amusing to me was how every single person except one absolutely hated Windows 8 and could not for the life of them figure out how to, you know, get the start menu back and, you know, add things and so on. I mean, it was kind of amusing, sadly amusing. but none of them wanted the Windows 8 Pro upgrade, and I'm supposed to throw them on Craigslist. Nobody wanted it. So, I mean, this could be a way too for Microsoft to really drive adoption and get the thing out there. And so now they've got a next gen platform out there that they can upgrade.
Yeah.
So
makes sense. Yep.
Well, Windows 7, though, is still pretty solid, so it's going to take a lot to get people to move off of that, I would think.
Yeah.
If you're running, you know, XP or whatever, yeah, you got to make an upgrade to something. And, you know, if they make it more cost-effective to go from XP to Windows 8.1, a lot of people are going to do that.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, there's just so much out there now. You know, even this new Google Project Aura, which is a modular phone. I mean, there's so many things. I mean, which direction do you go? Do you go Android? Do you go Windows? Do you go Mac? Do you go iOS? You know, for most people, where do I put my money?
Well, I guess it's a market that is, you know, you have choices at every price point.
Yeah,
including $50, if you believe this report. They're going to have a modular phone that will be as low as $50. And you can, of course, you know, buy different modules to add more capability and it would increase the price. But to start at $50 that's pretty aggressive.
That is. But I don't know if I'd want a phone I'd snap together. But who knows?
I don't know. We'll see when it comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a lot of the world, you know, it's very price sensitive. So the ability to, you know, just to get in and then add what you want when you can afford it, I think that's an attractive proposition.
Well, and of course, how many people, including us, have talked about how great it would be if you could have, you know, a slot in the side of your computer that you could unplug the CPU and pop in the new one, that it would be that easy. But now, you know, because I'm not going to go in and solder in a new CPU or even snap one in and doing any soldering. But, you know, in terms of how you have to use the thermal glue, and it's like, no, I mean, I'm not going to go in there and do that. So,
yeah, well, I mean, all the phone makers seem to be making these disposable devices, you know, that only last for a couple of years and maybe three if you really take care of it. And then, you know, because the battery wears out or whatever, most people are just going to get rid of it. Having something that you can build on over a period of years would be kind of interesting and say, hey, I just need a new battery module. And you go and you buy it for, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You snap that in and, hey, I'd like a better camera. You know, you go out and you get a better camera, you snap that in. I mean, this seems like it could be like a Rube Goldberg kind of a deal. But then again, it could be something that might develop into something.
Another early Google experiment, you know. I mean, you just got to wonder, okay, will this hardware project succeed when so many others that they come out with don't, you know? But apparently, was this something that the Motorola folks were working on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it came out of like a Kickstarter-y kind of a thing.
Okay, okay.
And the Motorola people took it under their wing, and when they sold Motorola, they kept this. This is part of the R&D labs portion of Motorola that Google kept.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, what new events are coming up this week?
Well, you know, we've got a mini analytics event coming up March 19th at the Dayblock Brewing Event Center, which is going to be focused in the afternoon on product innovation with the PDMA local chapter coordinating with mini analytics. And then the evening portion of it is on data visualization with the local DataViz group being part of that. So, that should be a fun event with free beer. So,
you're all over that.
Go red. Well, I wish I could be, but I have been thinking about, I can't make that event. I'm going to be in New York. I've been, you know, toying with the idea of getting a press pass to another GigaHome event and their big data event called Structure Data is March 19th and 20th in the Big Apple. So I'm going to be there covering that event. So I'll miss Mini Analytics, but I'm going to, Steve, I was telling you about my, Flipboard magazine,
yeah.
Big Data in the Wild. I figured I'm going to try to cover the event by flipping my blog post into my Big Data in the Wild magazine and tweeting from my Big Data in the Wild Twitter account, which is just Big Data Wild, because that's all I can fit in the name. But anyway, I was telling you how many subscribers I have to that crazy thing now. It's like up to practically 4,500 subscribers and more than 75,000 page flips. But you know what the secret was, what really got it to take off?
Hmm.
Is Flipboard featured it in their daily picks.
Oh, interesting.
And they might have done it even more than once. I had somebody email me from New York, somebody I know, and said, hey, did you know your Flipboard magazine is in the daily picks? I go, what? And so that's when the numbers really started taking off. That was, I've only been doing it like 3 months. And that must have been, you know, like a month and a half or two ago when that happened. And so it's a lot of fun. So I'm going to be out in New York with all the big muckety mucks in the world of big data speaking about the latest and greatest. So anyway, I'll miss that. But then soon after that, we've got, well, Mobile March.
Mobile would you March. Believe?
I'm going to miss that too, which I'm really, oh, really? Bummed about. But certainly you guys will all be there.
So yeah, absolutely.
That's all day on the 20th, which is a Thursday at Earl Brown Heritage Center.
By the way, I put a link to that Flipboard magazine of yours. So
oh, yeah.
If everybody Thanks. Wants to just see it, if you don't have Flipboard, just hover over it and there's arrows that appear and you can go flip between the pages and so on.
Yeah, it works on the web. You don't have to have the app. Although I don't know if you can subscribe that way. Maybe you can.
No.
But anyway,
you can't.
You got to have the app to subscribe. Okay. But it's available on both iOS and Android, I'm sure.
Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. And
yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. There's even an iPhone version that came out after the iPad version, I know. So, yeah, it's fun. I kind of did that because of my work with Mini Analytics, you know, my volunteer work with them. And then I, you know, you can invite contributors. So I invited Dan Atkins from Mini Analytics to be a contributor to the magazine. But yeah, I'm pretty much on there every day curating articles in there, trying to find the best of the best, you know. So anyway, the world of content.
Yeah. And you can keep clicking through. I think eventually it archives the stuff, doesn't it?
What do you mean archives it?
Well, I mean, if you click through, you can see all the articles, but then if you get to the end, it's archived it, I think.
I guess I don't really know the answer to that, yeah. But yeah, you can click through going way back to, I mean, you can go, I think I'm upwards of close to 260 articles I've flipped into it now. So
yeah.
It's another way to read, you know, it's another reader app kind of a thing that's focused on specific interests and topics, and you can find damn near anything. I've got two or three other magazines. I was just asked to contribute to Mobile Maven, and then I have one called Healthcare Tech News that I started, and another one on surfing technology. So I diddle around with a couple others too. But Big Data in the Wild, that's the biggie. That one took off.
All right. Well, we got mini bar on the 12th of
April.
Of April, and then also mini webcoms coming up, overnight website challenge. So we'll put all the links in the show notes.
And hopefully winter will be over by April.
Oh God.
Please tell me.
I want to run from here screaming.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Yeah, it's people are just getting really fed up with winter.
Except for Tim. Tim doesn't care.
Well,
he loves it here.
He's in the basement all day long in Lakeville, right?
No, he gets to go out to the wine country all the time. Oh, anyway, well, everybody, thanks much, and we'll see you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
All right. Take care.
See you guys.
Hot. Hangs on in the turns and she knows what's what.